Good evening, everybody. It's Wednesday night at 8 p.m. So as we do every week here in New Jersey, we get together for NJRR Live, streaming out on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook Live. And tonight, for the first time, at www.njrevolutionradio.com. You go to our homepage. There's a YouTube player right there on the homepage, so you can watch us directly from our website for the first time tonight. We're really excited just to show you that, you know, we're moving forward here every day at New Jersey Revolution Radio. And we have you, our comrades, our sponsors, our Twitter retweeters, our shares on Facebook, and everybody else we have to thank for helping us grow this grassroots independent media network at the start of our show. You heard music by Q DaVincio. He was on last week, 2 weeks ago, and he's going to be on again coming up, I think, next week to talk about politics and rap and art and music and everything like that. And so look forward to that already. We are trying to do as much as we can to celebrate culture here. I think, you know, we've had a lot of discussions, it's downers, and tonight's going to be no different. We're going to talk about Kenosha and what's going on there, local racist activity. And we're going to talk about the very serious issue of racism and culture and the infiltration of police by right-wing and white supremacist type groups. But also, we need to spend some time celebrating our cultural, celebrating diversity and celebrating, you know, the people that are in the activist world that do positive things, which means art and music and all kinds of other work that we do, like, you know, our comrades in Mutual Morris, everybody that's been doing mutual aid and things like that. So we do spend time here in New Jersey Revolution Radio making sure we do some positive work. And to me, that means music. I mean, it puts me in a good mood, and I hope it does the same for you. But now that we had our good time listening to Q DaVincio, let's get off that. Let's get into some local, some national politics a little bit with our good friend Daryl Lamont Jenkins, who's here to co-host with me again this week. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing well. Can you hear me okay?
You sound great, man. You've got to, I see like the studio's happening on your end now. You got yourself a little microphone set up.
And well, I had the setup the whole time. It's just been a case of me bringing it over to this desk.
Yeah. Yeah, it's for me, it's just lighting left. You can see I look like I'm in a cave all the time. And yeah. We did try to order some lighting and stuff, but the pandemic hit and we couldn't get stuff shipped to us. And it was crazy. And I haven't followed through on it. But, you know, building the studio out looks good, man. You know, like we said, we're going to start on Kenosha a little bit tonight. And as leading up to the show, I took in as much as I can from social media and a few from, you know, mainstream news sources and articles out there and blogs and stuff. And to me, I mean, I'm almost numb at this point to, and I hate to say it, but like, I want to see real progress here. And some of what I caught today was the president's quote unquote round table, where he basically has a bunch of people sit around a table and praise him. And it's very odd. It's a very odd thing to watch people sit around and be like, oh, you're great. And this is great. And everything's great. And you're great. And thank you. And thank you. And thank you. And end of press conference.
Well, one of the things that's important to remember about that press conference is that they had, I believe, two black pastors that are related, that have some sort of relationship with the Blake family. I wanted to check and make sure.
What's that again? They don't, apparently. They don't.
Well, see, that's the thing. I've been trying to find out how they were related in the to the family. And what I was told, what I was listening to earlier today, is that they're not necessarily Trump supporters. They were there because, in the words of one of them, they wanted to just basically make sure that black people had a seat. They always fought to make sure that black people had a seat at the table, so they wanted to be at that table. But yeah, when someone asked the question about systemic racism in the community and such, and with the police, they was asking them, and Trump answered for them.
Yeah, I saw that.
That's what everybody's flipping about.
Yeah, and I also don't think that was their family's personal pastor. I think it was a pastor who was there to represent the community, which is fine. I mean, I respect a man going to the table to meet with the president and challenge him and represent, you know, his community. But I think it was presented as this was the Blake family pastor when they have no relationship with the man. He's just a pastor.
I'm going to check and make sure about that because I do not want to be on the air and not know.
I don't know. Does anybody know in the studio there, Christian? Do you know about this? No, he has no idea. So maybe we're talking. I believe that the Blake family said that they didn't have
a relationship with them. I can you double checking that for me? You Googling that for
me? I'm checking it now. As a matter of fact, I'm looking at the article on CNN. The two pastors were James Ward and Sharon Ward, who said they were pastors for. Hold on, my computer just that stupid as soon as I answered that question.
Technology. This is
okay. They are the pastors. Okay, they are the pastors for Julia Jackson, who was the mother of Jacob Blake. So there was a connection with the family. That's how they ended up there. But as we noted, they were asked whether they think police violence is a systemic issue. And when the reporter asked that issue, Trump interjected, "I don't believe that. I think the police did an incredible job. And I think you do have some bad apples." One bad apple spoils the whole bunch, chump.
Yeah, I'm reading here on The Hill reported that Jacob Blake's father said Monday that the family does not have a pastor after President right. Trump said yesterday during his press briefing that he'd spoken with the family's pastor.
Right. So the mother did. I mean, we just have to be clear on that. The mother does have pastors. So
there you go. So you're getting double checked, fact checked here live on the air. Always appreciated by you, man. Getting back. So we see this president, and when he was there, it was reported that he never said Jacob Blake's name. That he visited with business owners and showed sympathy towards police and said what a great job police are doing. And there was a part where I really wanted to ask you about, because you're connected to Portland and you know what's going on in that scene better than anybody I know personally. Right. I mean, so and he's continually bringing up Portland and he's saying that, listen, I've come in here to Kenosha and I fixed the problem. He basically said, and he did. I mean, this is his exact words. It'll take us an hour to go to Portland and fix it. Right. You go there about an hour and back to lollipops and sunshine.
Well, the truth of the matter is he's just playing the game at this point. I mean, we already know that. We already know that's what he's about. When he talks about Portland, he's just talking about the last game that he played. He wants to do it in Kenosha. He wants to do it in Chicago. That's what he was running down that day. And the problem that he has is no one's going to let him, especially after what we saw him do in Portland. Portland actually stepped up last month and showed them the door. That's what he's mad about.
Yeah.
That's why he keeps bringing up Portland. Portland knows how to fight this. Portland has been fighting fascists for over 30 years, whether from the day that Mudugeta Sarab was murdered by Eastside White Pride and the war happened there. For those who don't know, excuse me, y'all. For those who don't know, Mudugeta Sarab was an Ethiopian student, college student, and he was attacked by a bunch of neo-Nazis and was killed. And you might be familiar with this because they were associated with a group called White Aryan Resistance, based in Fallbrook, California at the time, and run by a guy named Tom Metzger. SPLC sued Tom Metzger and his son John. They lost, basically, Tom and John Metzger are spending the rest of their lives paying for Mudugeta Sarab's son. So, but what was left in its wake was this war that was going on between anti-fascists and the Nazis in Portland, Oregon. It's been nothing but a war going on. It subsided for about 27 years. And then it comes right back, thanks to Donald Trump.
You see,
it comes right on back. So that's what we're fighting right now. When you talk about all of this nonsense that has happened with Portland, it started in 2017 when Patriot Prayer, a group called Patriot Prayer, will come from Vancouver, Washington, along with the Proud Boys, to start holding regular rallies. And one of those attendees to that rally was Jeremy Christian, who ended up killing two people who were trying to stop him from harassing and attacking two Muslim women on a train. He's sitting in jail for the rest of his life now. And it's just been escalating more and more and more and more since. So now we are where we are today. Trump thinks he can accelerate the war in Portland a little bit more. And Portland said, no, you're not. And the federal troops retreated. But here's go on.
Well, I mean, just kind of tying it back to Kenosha. So what he's saying is he's already claiming Kenosha as a victory. you know, without any kind of real, you know, only because he, I guess, cracked down on protests. But now he's starting to use this as, and you heard him make these comments a couple of times that, you know, we're going to go into Portland and whether they like it or not, where, because right now, I guess the governor and the mayor have said, no, we don't want federal troops there or something. But now he's saying that he may come in. Now, could we see a situation? What kind of chaos does that cause? Do you have police fighting each other? Do the federals? And I mean, what happens when federal troops show up in conflict with local authorities in the middle of Nazis and anarchists having street fights?
Well, if Trump does try anything, and that's a very big if, we're just going to have to wait and see. But we already know how volatile the situation is in Portland, how volatile the situation is in Kenosha. As a matter of fact, Kenosha has kind of like subsided a bit. He brings troops into Kenosha, he's just bringing it right back up again. And the only thing that we can see over the next couple of months, things might die down because it's going to start getting cooler. And it gets cold real fast up there. So maybe things will die down. We have to see. But if not, if things are still hot and heavy, then Trump is basically putting not just the future of his presidency in hand, in at risk, which hopefully won't be a long future, but he may find himself locked up. He may find himself locked up. Now, these are all preferable things, but the fact of the matter is, it will be even more preferable if we don't have to hear about someone else getting killed, someone else getting injured, Nazis thinking that they have the run of the place. So these are all the things that we have to be concerned about even after Trump is gone. But in the here and now, that is going to be my concern. We don't want to see any more loss of life just because he wants to own the libs. You're speechless, I see. It's frustrating. You know, it is frustrating.
It, like I started off with kind of feeling a little numb about this, and I don't mean, it's just I'm seeing this over and over again, and I'm not seeing, and I'm hearing it get roped in, and Joe Biden, who is out there making speeches supporting the police and basically saying, I'm not going to ban fracking and the green. Like, it's just, honestly, I think this season for activists, presidential election season, is very, very depressing. It's just very, because all of our resources get drained. We've got these important street struggles going on. We've got these important social developments going on. Black Lives Matter went from being a terrorist organization to being a legit social movement. Major League Baseball players who were refusing to kneel and are now, like, you know, protesting games, and we've got all this great social work, and it's all getting sucked off into Joe Biden, who's basically same old shit.
Well, hey, look, I mean, I don't think that the situation, I mean, whatever's going to be happening in the election in November, I mean, I just keep telling people whenever I'm talking to them, and I think I probably even said it here, this is the election. I don't think anybody is really looking at November as being the solution to anything right now. I mean, they need a solution right now.
That's the problem with some of these issues. I mean, people, like you said, we're tired of watching people get killed, man.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm just tired of it.
Yeah, but the thing is, and the sad thing about it is, there's more coming. There's more coming. We cannot say.
It could be prevented. It could be prevented.
It could have been prevented. I mean,
you know, it hasn't been prevented yet. That's what's frustrating to those of us that are watching history repeat itself.
I mean,
you know, even again with conservative Democrats taking power, and in this case, two people who are directly responsible for mass incarceration.
Well, see, that's the thing.
And this is our best hope. And so you're right. I mean, the point is to fight on issues, right? The point is that, you know, I really don't care whether you're into environmentalism or anti-fascist work or whatever. I try to stay focused on that. I really do. And I think that's the key. I don't feel that that's what the majority of Americans focus on. think the majority of, because of us, we're who we are, right? Let's face it. We are right. Not the majority of Americans. We're a little left of that, a tad bit, right? So, I mean, let's face it, that the average person is just watching Joe Biden and Donald Trump duke it out with no real, and that is just not reality. I mean, at this point, our political system isn't even connected to these issues that we're fighting for in the streets. You know, when you're talking about Black Lives Matter, and then you're talking in a political system, yay, blue, and we're not going to ban fracking.
Yeah.
There's a disconnection there.
I mean, there's always been that disconnect, But the thing is, we have accepted it for so long. And now, hold on one moment, because I feel that cough coming on. But now we have, we're at a point where we're mad. We are very mad over the prospects of November. And we see us going through the same situation that we've always been going through. And we're being told in an election year that we have to vote to change everything. And we're looking at the people who we're supposed to be voting for. And says, this isn't going to work. That means we're going through this for another 4 years without any solutions, without any resolutions, anything. People are mad. People are scared. Let me tell you something.
I think it's going to get better. I do. Remember, we talked a week ago. You cheered me up a week ago.
It's going to get better. Well, yeah, I do think it's going to get better because people are actually saying, you know what? Here's what happened. Trump exposed how bad it can get. It ain't near as bad as it can get. But Trump showed us that we're on our way. Trump should have never been able to get this far with this kind of nonsense. And the problem with the past 4 years is that Americans who and folks in the society are sitting there looking at things happen that they never wanted to have happened. And they're like helpless. They feel like there is nothing they can do to stop it. And the options that they have come 4 years. First of all, when Trump became president, I said, look, if he's there for four, he's there for eight. Now, that's not necessarily true, but people are scared to death that that might be the case. But they're also not too sure what will happen if he does lose and Biden and Harris are in. They are worried that there's a lot of things that Trump will keep, that Trump has put in place that they will keep there. There's a lot of people who think that, including myself, who think that when Trump is gone, everybody's going to think, oh, the white supremacists are gone too, and they can go to brunch. Okay. And then there are folks who are never really been on our side and are just using these days, this Black Lives Matter or anti-fascism as a way to keep pushing their way through the Democratic door. And we're basically just being exploited by that crowd. We look at all of that and we say, none of this is going to help us in the future. We can help ourselves in the future. And now Trump is showing us that we have to help ourselves in the future. Hence why everything is blowing up now.
There's a pattern in our political system, which I've talked about for years, which somebody pointed out to me. I forget who early on, but basically you rally your base in primary season. So the idea is, during primary season, you have different candidates, right, in one party, and you have the opposition candidate. So the other party will do something like, I don't know, have a progressive candidate rally up the progressive base, have conservative candidates rally up the conservative base. And the candidates tend to lean into the most extreme of those elements. You want to get the talkers talking. You want to get, so in the Republican case, you want to get the racists and the right wingers and the people that are clearly mentally ill talking a lot. I mean, that's what you want to do. And then as they draw that attention into the regular general election season, where the public actually starts to now remember, Americans aren't paying attention like we are, right? Americans are not they don't get the connection to the racist right into the Republican Party. And we're going to talk about their connection to the cops in a little bit. But they don't see that. So during that time period, you can get away with all kinds of nonsense on any end. Doesn't matter. Democrats can go, you know, you have Communist Party USA telling communists to vote for Democrats. It's fucking crazy, right? But nobody's paying attention. So when the general election comes around, media, corporate media starts to pay attention. People start to become cognizant of our politics like they do for 6 months every 4 years. The candidates now calm down. And you're going to watch Donald Trump change. I guarantee you he's going to calm down. Just like Joe Biden will, you know, I don't know if Joe Biden can calm down. I guess he would have to wake up. And...
Everybody, let me tell you something. Now, here's where I start doing convention.
Well, I want to say, let me just wrap this up, though. But okay, because, I think because of where our politics are, that condition, that training of ramp it up in the primary season and then bring it down is becoming dangerous. It's leading to violence. It's leading to, you know, these extreme groups taking to the streets and shooting at each other now at this point.
Right.
And I think we really need to recognize this pattern of behavior as a country and say, listen, you know, you need to represent your politics on a regular, on a consistent basis. If you're for the Green New Deal, you should be with it all the time. You shouldn't be back and forth and flip-flopping. But that's what these candidates do. And they do it by political design, not by any kind of shift in moral value. You know, that's all.
Right. And I think the important thing is that we know what we need to do. I mean, we know what they're going to do, but we know what we need to do. So that that is where we're going with all of this. I will tell you that the two major parties are on notice. I mean, that's how positive I am about this. The two major parties are on notice. They're not going to be here long. They're not going to be here. And I'm going to tell you something else, too. I'm not really big on party politics of any stripe whatsoever.
Yeah, me neither.
And my attitude, to be honest with you, is I hope all parties are on notice. Because, frankly, I want to start seeing somebody that is more attuned to where we are all as a people are attuned to. Somebody asked me earlier, like yesterday, as a matter of fact, who do I want to see as president? I said, somebody with no connections to a political party that's making $40,000 a year. And the $40,000 a year is just arbitrary for me right now. But the fact of the matter is, I want somebody who actually gives a damn about the people that are in this country and not some folks who are just trying to get over for the sake of their party. I mean, that's what we need. I mean, but we're not going to get that in the structure that we have right now. So we deconstruct the structure. That's basically the mission.
Build.
I want to point out something else, too, incidentally.
Yeah.
This just came down the pike. Police killed an 18-year-old brother in D.C.
In Washington, D.C.
In Washington, D.C. I'm trying to get the information on that now. A court, apparently, I don't have it with me, but I did just see it. But apparently there was a shooting and police killed a 18-year-old kid. So folks are heading on out there right now.
Oh, that's terrible. Well, I'm going to I hate to pause. Let's see if Christian wants to come in a little early. Christian, you want to come a little early and talk about this? Like, yeah, sure he does. Like, he smiles. Yeah, of course he wants to come on the air. There he is. Hey, there he is. Christian Perez is going to join us for this next. So we have some, you know, I'll take a look at that Washington, D.C. story. Want to welcome Christian Perez from Modernity and Absurdity podcast. How are you, comrade?
Doing okay today. Doing okay. Thanks again for having me, guys.
Yeah. I wish we had more better news to talk about, but I'm excited for our main panel chat. We're going to hold off on that for a minute because, like Daryl said, we got to stick to what we're doing. So yeah. Let's dox a Nazi. Let's do that. Christopher Makropoulos.
Let's do the Greek. Hey, we got to respect the Greek names here.
I'm not respecting this dude.
I respect the surname. His name is Chris. And besides, people need to know who he is. So it's Christo Makropoulos. Crystal Macropoulos. Okay. And for a long time, we've been dealing with him. At least one people's project has been basically keeping an eye on him. He's a local boy. He went to Edison High School. He's straight up Edison. He's running for the Edison School Board. This dude, and he's a vlogger. He has a he has a YouTube channel that we should be taking down soon called Jersey Watcher. And this guy, I mean, he's profane as hell. But everybody's noticing him now because of a stunt he pulled yesterday, because he was at this Woodbridge City Council meeting wearing a Confederate flag around his waist and and videotaping, I guess, black students or something like that. I'm still trying to find out exactly what he was there for and what he was about. Yes. And what I do know about him, however, I'm just going to just go straight to it. I first came across him because last year, do you recall racist flyers at Edison that were going after an Asian and Indian school board candidates talking about make Edison great again? Aside from the local politics that was playing the game, there was the racism.
Yeah.
And this flyer was attacking these two individuals because they were Asian. So there was a town hall meeting last I want to say July, where they discussed these flyers. So Crystal Macropoulos decided he was going to go there and cause some grief. And basically the headline reads, after Edison meeting on racist flyers, Indian man told to get on a plane and get out of America. Now, this is how everybody was introduced to Crystal Macropoulos. And he basically says, if Indians, basically, I think he accused the flyers came out. Basically, here's his quote in the video. If Indians set out racist flyers intimidating other Indians and Chinese to blame the bleeping white man, shut the bleep up, he said. You guys are bleeping cowards, all of you. You bleeping Indian scum.
Wait. So can I got a question. Why is it with these types, it's always like these hypothetical scenarios? Right? Like it's always like, well, what about this? Well, we're not asking. We're talking about the real world. And in the real world, you're a racist ass. Right? Nobody, like, they always want to, like, raise these hypothetical points about, you know, these hypothetical situations about, well, what if a brown person stepped on my foot and didn't apologize? Well, that's where, like, it always kind of throws me off that this is about misdirection. It's always about something.
Hang on. I got to show you a picture. Do you know who this is? The woman on the left?
I am not familiar with that person.
I do not know who they are.
You know who Lyndon LaRouche is?
Oh, my God.
Please don't tell me there's a connection.
Oh, no.
LaRouche PAC candidate. I sat on a bus with those crazy fucking eyes looking at me, telling me about Obama being Hitler and a Nazi and all kinds
of things. No, LaRoucheites think, like, as the conspiracy theory guy, LaRoucheites think that American power is still controlled by the British royal family. These are the people that will wait outside the DMV to, like, hand you their weird literature. They, like, back in the 80s, they got in trouble because they would go to rallies and assault protesters with, like, bat. Like, the LaRoucheites are straight up fascists, right? Yeah. So if this is
crazy as hell. Yeah.
If this is the pool that this guy is swimming in, then it's absolutely unsurprising.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even know that he was associated with the LaRouche, and that just explains everything. Because, frankly, for those who are not familiar with the LaRouches,
Lyndon LaRouche,
they are. He just died maybe 2 or 3 years ago, too.
Yeah.
Because they're a little crazy about that, too. But they are the original conspiracy theorists. They are the ones who started it all. QAnon ain't got nothing on them, you know.
Yeah, I mean, what's crazy is these are people
and I'm looking all over the LaRouche website. She's all over. She's the main organizer, like, for LaRouche PAC. And I knew she had run for Congress because.
But what this guy is, from what I have seen, is that he goes above and beyond the call of the LaRouche bullshit. You know, I mean, I've gathered up a lot of his videos because I did not want him to go away once folks deleted his page. But he has a few articles out there, and one article, in January, he got a lawsuit for his trouble because he slandered a teacher in Edison because he and a couple of other people had her identity mixed up with another Middlesex County school teacher who was fired in 2006 after being accused of having sex with a student. They said that she was that student. So this is the guy, kind of guy that we're dealing with. And if you look at any of his videos, and if you post this video, just be prepared that there's a lot of cursing and a lot of nonsense. He's just basically attacking
Hey, you just described this show too.
No, okay. And, okay, I said nonsense.
Well, we don't oppose some certain kinds of nonsense here. I mean,
there is a difference between our nonsense and his.
Yeah.
His is rooted in insanity. Oof. I mean, when you do hear him talk, it does warrant listening to how he acts. He does live on the internet. He does think a lot of himself. And he's a straight-up crackpot.
I mean, I'm sorry. No, I saw because you had sent me the link earlier today, and I spent a whole like 2 or 3 minutes looking at it. And it's just I'm not going to make any judgments as to the guy's mental health or personality, but just to give somebody insight, like he wore a Confederate flag and was trying to say that it was some kind of like Eastern European nationalist flag. I didn't really spend too much time looking at it. Look, here's the reality. If you're still wearing a Confederate flag, you're a racist asshole. It's that simple. Like, there's always somebody trying to, like, I don't know. It's
well, it was cute because when I was looking on his page, there were some folks who were basically exposing themselves to us as well because they were saying, yeah, I'm with the New Jersey Sons of Confederate Veterans, and I love what you did. And I'm like, thank you for letting me know you exist.
Yeah.
And then he started, especially when he started talking about the Confederate monuments that we have in this state, and says, okay, we got some targets. So that's what I got out of this little stump from yesterday. But I think, having said that, we're really going to have to start paying attention to him and keeping an eye out for town council meetings, especially if they're centered around race. If there's any subject matter focusing on racial politics, keep an eye out for him. Keep an eye out for him in Edison, Highland Park, Woodbridge. I mean, just this general area. The last video that I saw him that I was just looking at, he wanted to pay a visit to the FBI building or something like that. And he went to my hometown, Somerset, New Jersey. I was like, okay, you're getting a little too close. I may have to introduce myself to him sometime, which means he may be in the Brunswick one day.
Are there still Nation of Islam in Somerset?
Yes, there is.
I was there for a year, and I went to the KFC, and there were dudes like selling the magazines. I was like, oh wow, look at that. I was like, I had that like full on like with the hats and pea coat and everything.
There's a lot of NOI in New Jersey.
Well, NOI is in New Jersey, in Somerset, and in New Brunswick. I mean, they got a
Plainfield. I saw them in Plainfield.
Plainfield, definitely. I actually, when I was a reporter in good standing, I actually sat in the press conference with Louis Farrakhan, and they brought him, and that was in Plainfield. So,
yeah, well, and the tactic of running for school board is not unheard of. Remember, we had my little buddy down there in another town. I won't mention. I hear he still talks about me. I never said his name once. Okay, but I know he said my name a bunch of times. So thanks for the free pub, bro.
Yeah. Well, we're not gonna let Crystal Macropoulos get that far.
No, he's not getting that far.
I'm
glad we exposed a little more tonight. We found out, you know, maybe he's got some connection to LaRoucheites, for fuck's sake. It doesn't get worse.
You'll see him outside the DMV. Like I said, they're outside the DMV telling you that Obama is owned by the British royal family. Just give him one of these.
Fantastic analysis on the part of Lyndon LaRouche and his political system. Tonight's show is sponsored by the August Agency. They do QuickBooks accounting and more. You can reach them at 201-895-7227, or you can get them on the internet, www.theaugustagency.biz. Charlie, of course, helps us here with all of our accounting practices and mathematical skills, to which I have none. So it's nice to have a guy that can, you know, tag my expenses and do stuff. And I check in with him like every couple of weeks or months, and he tells me I fucked everything up, and then he fixes it. I love him. He's great. And at the end of the year, I know my taxes are taken care of, and, you know, I really go smooth. It's one less thing I have to worry about here at New Jersey Revolution Radio. And you should have to worry less about your money and your accounting and when you file for your taxes. So give Charlie a call over at the August Agency. One more time, that's 201-895-7227, or you can reach them at theaugustagency.biz. And that's our commercial. It's our only commercial tonight. We're just keeping it light. You know, we don't have a lot of sponsors. We don't need a lot of money to run New Jersey Revolution Radio, but your donations can help too. I'll do that plug at the end of the show. Right now, we're going to start to talk about something that ties into our a little bit of what we talked about in Kenosha and some of these things. And the reason why I'm really grateful to have this panel, and I know Margaret Kimberly will be joining us very shortly, but we're going to get started here. The reason why this panel, I think, is really important because we have our conspiracy theory expert and we have a guy that's, you know, seen this kind of infiltration takes place. And I, from my outside looking in, and the initial question is, how bad is it? Like when we present tonight, you know, I'm listening to hear, you know, do I have to worry about every cop? And my kind of thought on it is, it's a culture problem. And regardless of whether it's five cops in a police station or 10 cops or half the police station that's involved, you know, either directly or indirectly with racist organizing, I don't want to believe, nor can I really believe, that every police officer in every station goes to a Klan meeting after work. That's ridiculous. There's lots of black police officers and plenty of people who aren't racist who still involve themselves in other oppressive type of activities. So what the worry for me is, as an organizer, I know what the effect is when you have one guy or one person in a workplace who says, I'm going to change the culture here, and I'm going to do so purposefully, and I'm going to have conversations and manipulate people or lie to people or, you know, try to persuade them politically into this way of thinking. I've personally not manipulated, but I've organized and talked to people and brought people into my ideas and the ideas of union labor. So I know that it doesn't take a lot. It could take one cop out of dozens, depending on how many contacts he makes, to wind up affecting thousands of lives, whether it be people getting thrown in jail or murdered or beaten or whatever, you know, by changing culture. And so that's why I worry about it, regardless of the level of organizing. But I'd like to get a grip on how bad it is. I'm sure, you know, everything is different, but that's what I'm looking to hear tonight. And I want to thank Christian Perez, our conspiracy theory expert, who's always got a realistic view on things, but does take on these issues as they develop, to give us that perspective. And of course, Daryl, your years of anti-fascist work and seeing corrupt police. I'm looking forward to it. So I'll just ask the first question, starting off with Daryl. How bad is it, man, nationwide? I mean, when we talk about racist police, what's the reality of what are police racist? Is the system racist? How bad is it?
Yes. No, seriously. I think they pretty much show themselves for who they are every day. I mean, but I will be honest with you. I mean, this is where we start getting into the political. I think a lot of the problems that we have, especially on the racial level, comes from the fact that they are being fueled by a really sick right wing out there. Whether you're talking about the police themselves, or, you know, Fox News or whatever, I think conservatives, the right, the fascist right, have seen police as their shock troops for so long without any real pushback from us. I mean, I've always found it interesting that we in this country stopped talking about lynching around the same time we started talking about police brutality. And that little transition is telling, because it basically sounds as though we're saying, okay, we can't kill black people illegally anymore. Let's try the legal approach. And it's worked for them for over 50 years. Now, granted, we've had police brutality for longer than 50 years. I mean, the first time someone mentioned police brutality in the press at all was maybe 1874, you know, like 40 years after the first police department was ever built and created, I should say. So I think the awareness, and I think the assertiveness on our part to put an end to it probably started 50 years ago. Thank you, Black Panthers. So now you know why they hate the Black Panthers so much. But and I think now this, we always seem to come into these shifts where we are able to push back somewhat. In 92, after the Rodney King beating, we was able to push back. In 99, when Amadou Diallo was murdered, we was able to get some, a little pushback. It's a little bit more, I guess, sustaining now, because in 92 and in 99, we didn't have ourselves as Black people in certain positions where we could move things, where we are doing more than what they say that we were doing. You know, we are in certain positions where we can make things happen.
Yeah.
Not to mention, we also have the internet, and we also have cameras that we that double as phones. Please know that I said it that way.
Yeah.
And I think that has been making all the difference in the world for us. But what is making us mad as hell this year is that we look at our political structure, we look at our political climate or scene or whatever, and we see a bunch of people who are supposed to be on our side, supposed to be, that don't care. So we're flaring up. We said, look, we're fired up. We can't take no more. We really freaking can't. I mean, when you're at the point where all you have to say is Black Lives Matter and that gets them mad, then you know that there's an issue. We could have just said, leave us alone. And they would have said that that was a communist plot to leave us alone. So because we have this kind of political climate, more to the point, because we have this political element in play, we now have to recognize that, yeah, the police are a problem, most certainly, not discounting that one damn bit, but the problem really does have a foundation, and that foundation is that right-wing element that wants to further it along because the police are working out an effort to kill their enemies. And that's what we're dealing with right now.
Yeah, I appreciate Margaret Kimberly has joined us, taking a little time out of her.
Hi, guys.
Hello.
I saw you.
Take up that time.
No, thank you. So we just got started, Margaret, but I did want to say thank you for joining us. I know you've been busy, and I saw some of your social media. You've been getting out a little bit and, you know, breaking quarantine finally. I've been doing the same thing over here. I want to, you know, did the family thing, and it's been nice. I got to say, it does feel good to go.
It is. It is.
You know, so I'm glad to see you.
Out of jail. Yeah, out of COVID jail.
It is. The social isolation's been tough. I'm lucky to have a lot of people in my house, but the same people every day in your house, I don't know what's worse. You know, I know my comrades that live alone have had a trouble with isolation, but being in the house with the same six other people for months or a year on end ain't a picnic either. I can tell you that. Even though we love each other very much.
Of course, of course.
So we got into tonight, and I'll just jump right into it with you. The question which Daryl talked about, and I'll ask Christian right after you, is how bad is it? Like when we talk about, and I mentioned just before you got on, I don't want to believe that every cop goes to a Klan meeting right after work, right? And we have Black cops, they have Puerto Rican cops. There's clearly people that may not be racist, but are still involved in this oppressive system. So when I ask you, nationwide, as a system, how bad is it when we talk about the real racist right involved in policing?
I think it is very bad. It's funny, my Black Agenda Report column this week, I titled it, "We Live in a Right-Wing Militia in This Country." We live in this giant militia, and we have to stop acting like these people are outliers, like this Kyle Rittenhouse. He's no outlier. The police, they welcomed him. You know, yes, the U.S. is a racist militia. Thank you. I couldn't remember my own title. Thanks very much. The police chief said he blamed people for getting shot. Well, they were out after curfew. Well, nobody said anything to Rittenhouse for being out after curfew. The police said, "We're glad you're here." So, and my point was about law enforcement in particular, it's inherently white supremacist. However, to answer your question about the larger country, the problem is we have a weak left. I think that's the biggest problem. There's no countervailing force. If you have a president saying, it's just choked like in golf. I think he was talking about the cops who shot Jacob Blake, or was he talking about Rittenhouse? He was excusing somebody for shooting saying he choked like he was playing golf. That's a huge problem when people on the left, even those who are truly on the left, are being herded to support this milquetoast guy, who's also racist, by the way, Biden. His whole history is racist. And we're being told that the only way to get rid of the orange man racist is to put the guy with dementia racist in office. And if Biden loses, it will be because the Democrats, first of all, their big campaign was earlier this year. It was getting rid of Bernie Sanders. That was their big campaign. Their biggest priority was making sure that the progressive policies that people need and want were off the table, not to be discussed, not to be expected that they'll ever be discussed again. That was their big campaign. And the fact that they foisted this man on us, and people are being told to ignore the fact that they're not talking about anything people need. The things that would help him get elected, they're hoping to thread this needle and, you know, somehow he can win. And all this talk about polls showed him ahead, would not so much anymore, by the way. But I don't know what it meant anyway. Hillary Clinton, all the polls said she was going to win. What do the polls say in Wisconsin, one of those states that flipped for Trump? All right, what are the Democrats doing to get people out who are infrequent voters? So the weakness of the left is also a part of the problem. People are very diffuse and dispersed, and they are being told to ignore the things they need and they want in order to get this other horrible man elected. That's, to sum up, that's where we are now.
Yeah. All right. So now this is the part where I bring in Christian, and he tells us we're just all crazy.
No.
Conspiracy, and we're out of, and it's cool, and they're good cops, right?
Well, there are good cops. I mean, there's a couple of them. I had a basketball coach who was a cop when I was like 10. Then he turned out to be a Chris Christie guy. So I don't know, but there are good cops out there. And I mean, it was a bad joke, but I mean, the reality is it's not a conspiracy, right? Margaret's article, a number of other articles are really just hammering home that the police have been infiltrated. It's been an issue for some time. It has been an issue for well over 100 years, whether it's abolition, whether it's affirmative action, whether it's civil rights legislation, whether it's even unions trying to organize. There is always a perceived back. There's always a white backlash. There's always a backlash from Capitol, right? And as long as these types of people, these people who live in this world where Jews and Muslims and immigrants are trying to take everything away, as long as that world is tied to this idea that masculinity requires owning a gun, you're going to see more violence. You are going to see an increase in these types trying to become police officers. And when you look at, you know, the brainless law and order rhetoric, like the type of people that still follow Joe Arpaio, these are the types of people that tie their masculinity to gun ownership, that tie their masculinity to violence, that are buying into these right-wing myths. These are the type of people that end up becoming police officers. And I see no signs of them going away, no signs of them disappearing. It's cliche to say, but bad people infiltrating the police, as broad as you want to make that statement, is as American as apple pie. It's just the way it's always been. You can't find just one or two instances. You will be inundated with instances of them working. And it's not just the KKK, right? It's throughout the entire spectrum of the right. So it could be out and out white supremacists. It could be Proud Boys, who are white supremacists that allow dark people in their group. And then just a number of other groups. And I mean, I'm sure that Daryl and Margaret have come across the idea of the concept of the sleeper skins, right? These are skinheads that are white supremacists that don't dress outwardly. They don't show any signs of being a white supremacist, but they try to infiltrate society and bring their white supremacist ideas into the mainstream, whether it be bureaucracy, whether it be elected politicians, police, military, judges, so on and so forth.
Well, one of the things I said, this idea of police departments being infiltrated, I'm sure that happens, but I was making a point about the fact that these organizations, that law enforcement is inherently racist. They don't, nobody needs to infiltrate. That's who they are. It's what they do.
It's hand in glove.
Yeah, the question is, do you really need to infiltrate an organization like the FBI, which has a history of setting up and smearing activists? You know, I mean, like, do you need, but there are, I mean, I think what we're talking about is right-wing paramilitary types, right? Which Darryl has some familiarity, and they brag a lot. And now the question is, do they brag a lot about all their cop connections? But then we see Border Patrol smacking these guys on the shoulders when they kick over water bottles. We just saw in Kenosha them throwing water bottles to these guys and saying thanks a lot for your help. I mean, so even if it's just acceptance of their presence, you know, like, the culture is all fucked up.
The cops are wearing their logos on their uniforms.
Yeah, Darryl, do you so what I'm talking about, this direct organizing, like, hey, we're gonna train you, we're gonna send you into the pigs, you're gonna be a pig and you're gonna do racist shit. How effective has that tactic been for these organizations?
Well, for one thing, I gotta stress that skinheads are not racist.
That's true.
I'm sorry.
We need a whole lesson on that.
Let's rewind. Of skinheads, there is a subgenre of white supremacist skinheads, and I saw
there's no such thing as a white supremacist skinhead.
I've seen a couple
of heads come out of Jamaica. All right.
I'm not talking about that ska stuff, man.
That ska stuff is what created the skinhead culture.
I'm gonna find some ska music. While you,
I have to be out of this argument because I don't know.
Okay.
Oh, I know.
That's a whole other show.
Skinheads created that. Stand up, fight back.
Yes.
Working class streetwear, and they're out of Oregon. So
we'll send you some links, comrade. We'll send you some links.
So here we go. Here I got what I would say about. All of it. Damn, now I forgot the question.
About the strategy of right-wing paramilitary groups training and really using operatives as opposed to just influence, you know?
Well, you know, it's crazy because I brought up Tom Metzger of Portland, who started the White Aryan Resistance. When he lost that battle, when he lost that court case and had to shell out $12 million to Mulugeta Sabraw's son, and his family, he basically said the white separatist movement will not be stopped in the puny city of Portland. He said that 30 years ago. And he said flat out, I planted my seeds. And he said this word, all the skinheads are growing their hair out and getting jobs. We are in your college. We are in your churches. Yeah. We are in your police forces. He says that. I got the video of it somewhere around there. I know I put it on Facebook. Because I used it because it was funny because back last year, I used that video and compared it to what a Proud Boy by the name of Joe Biggs out of Florida was saying, where he said, I'm on my way to Portland. I got the police with me. I got school teachers with me, yada, yada, yada. And I'm sitting there going, yep, nice little analogy. I will use this because truth of the matter is, yes, that's what they're doing. I had One People's Project has been around for 20 years. I went from dealing with the street Nazis on the regular to dealing with the Nazis that are in the boardrooms. Somewhere around 2005, I was really dealing hardcore with the Nazis that were messing around in American Renaissance. And the Council of Conservative Citizens, the Nazis that were trying to bring their ideas, back into the Beltway, so to speak. They're not just in politics, there's also in academia. And this is why we have to be mindful of our more right-wing college professors out there as well. And give you an idea of how hardcore it can get. This was where I came across Richard Spencer.
He was a Ron Paul guy, wasn't he?
Huh?
He was a Ron Paul guy.
He was a fundraiser for Ron Paul. He worked for Pat Buchanan. He was a tutor at some school somewhere.
And a complete and total white separatist.
And a complete and total white separatist. And he was not the only one. And in regards to people of color who get involved with that, Michelle Malkin, the world's darkest white supremacist. I mean, it's amazing. You sit there and watch a dark-skinned Filipina woman with a Jewish husband and biracial children talk like Tom Metzger. And it may be, you know what, sometimes, Christian, I would say that it would be about money. It would be about a grift. Not in her case.
She's a true believer.
She's a true believer. And let me tell you something about the Philippines, just to digress. I was went to the Philippines in 2015, and it's a culture that is, there's a lot of colorism there. I mean, advertisements for a skin lightening product, skin lightening salon, every cosmetic lightens the skin, soap, lotion, everything. So there are many Filipinos and dark or darker than she is, but it's a racist culture, a lot of colorism, among people of the same race. So I don't know if you call it racism or not, but I can totally see. And I think for someone like her, who is as dark as she is, who probably has been treated bad and called the N-word because she's dark, to come from a culture like that, it's actually not, in a weird way, not surprising. Although I know many, I have many comrades from the Filipino community, so I don't want to representative.
There's some great resistance, but that island has been colonized for hundreds, maybe even 1,000 years. I mean, they've been colonized
Several hundred years by the Spanish before the U.S.
Spanish-American War
was all about snatching Spain's colonies, and the U.S. had this horrible genocidal war to kill the Filipino resistance. At what point it was an official U.S. colony? But there are a lot of good folks from a lot of Marxists that I know of there.
Oh, right here in Jersey, New Jersey.
Right. But for someone of her type, I'm actually not surprised. But more to your point, but I also wanted to say something else. We're acting like this never happened before. The Klan was marching openly in the 20s. I mean, you can see the film of Klansmen in their hoods walking past the White House, who Klan meetings in churches. Harry Truman was a Klansman.
My hometown of Long Branch had a Klan rally in the 20s.
Who did?
My hometown of Long Branch, New Jersey had a Klan rally.
They did.
And so, actually, the property ended up becoming Monmouth Park Racetrack, where their headquarters was.
My town had the largest one.
What did?
My town, Somerset, New Jersey, had the largest Klan rally in the state back in 23.
Yes, so this is not new. There were also, we had the Lynch Law Terror. We had the Red Summer of 1918, 1919, after World War I, where there were massacres of black people all over the country. So people on the one hand said it can't happen here, and I'm like, yeah, we know it can happen here because it already did. So I think we need to remember that and not act as though this is some strange time that America has never seen before, because that's not true.
I think that speaks to what Daryl was saying, I think, just before you came on, Margaret, is there are people that look at Trump and that they think that, you know, in November, if Biden and Kamala Harris win, then we could just all go back to normal and everything's okay. Like, they just don't understand that. Even if you elect Biden and he will not make good on the promises he has not made, there will be another Trump in 4 years. Smarter, slicker, more articulate. And it's, I don't know, I feel like a lot of liberals get caught in this loop where they kick the can down the road and they don't realize that it's just going to get worse. I mean, it's the same thing. I mean, I keep saying my problem with the Biden supporters is I'm not saying that he's not worse, that I don't think he's as bad as Trump. But that being said, I'm not going to sit here and act like he's the greatest thing going. He's not.
No, right? He's not.
I'm like, stop giving me dog food and telling me it's steak. Right. It's an uninspiring election. It's an uninspiring campaign. Biden is low energy. I've seen one Biden son in where I live. Like, I don't know. All the people that are jumping on me saying, what do you mean you're not voting for Biden? None of them have made any calls for him. None of them have his yard signs.
They haven't been asked to. Where's the organization for him? This is the second time in a row that I've seen this, hearing about Trump signs, but no signs for the Democrat. I'm not hearing about people being asked to go to Pennsylvania or other states to do voter outreach. I honestly think that the Democratic Party donor class can live with Trump. I think part of it, they are phoning it in. I don't think they care that much if Trump
wins.
They wouldn't raise money. Fundraising. He's a fundraising. He is the goose that laid the golden egg in terms of fundraising.
Go ahead, Daryl.
That's as far as things are concerned, I mean, I think Democrats look at Trump as being a fundraiser. They look as a fundraiser. Like I said, they don't really. Neither party really cares about what it is we want in these streets. I mean, at all. I don't care if you're in the streets of North New Jersey or the streets of Summit. I mean, I do not think they care. Well, they probably care a little bit more if you're in the streets of Summit. But the truth of the matter is, in the end, as I keep pointing out, it's not going to have anything to do. Our solutions are not going to come from them. We already know that.
No, really.
When they talk about how if Biden gets in there, they're basically going to hold their feet to the fire. Well, you're mad at us, and we're the ones that said it.
I was about to say.
and I remember hearing Ed Rendell. Oh, by the way, let me tell you when I heard Ed Rendell say this. Kamala Harris goes after Biden because of the segregationist senators. We know that story. But Ed Rendell went on CNN to defend Biden and said what says it all for me. Democratic Party will never be progressive. Well, that's news for the progressives whose votes you want. And most importantly, as far as progressives are concerned, in many respects, we are still that group that built that party into what it is. In many respects.
Right.
This tells us that they never really wanted to do this. And that, like I said, that says it all. So when you hear that coming from at Rendell, who ran the DNC, you know you're only going to get lip service. I mean, I always tell people, I'm telling people right now, vote your voice. Do not let anybody intimidate you into voting for something that you don't want. Because the bottom line is, if they're telling you you will vote for somebody, they're telling you and you don't want to vote for that person. If you end up voting a way that you do not like, you're basically telling them that your voice doesn't matter. That means they're not listening to you, which means they're not listening to you when they get in there.
Yeah. No, of course not. Trump is moving after. I mean, the possibility of moving them is now. Well, actually, it's a bit late. It should have been early on. But at once they're in, because we've seen this movie, we know how they end. So let's suppose Biden wins. And half the people claiming they're going to hold his feet to the fire don't even mean it. They're going to breathe a sigh of relief that it's not Trump anymore, and they're not going
to
give a care.
Go to brunch.
So, yeah, exactly. The ones who really meant it, who say anything, what are they going to be told? Well, you know, he doesn't have a majority. Well, his majority's not big enough. Well, at least he's not Trump. Who are you to complain? Yeah. Then it will be, well, you know, there's an off-year election.
So we don't want to answer.
Off-year election, then it's going to be another presidential election. We've seen this. We know what they do. There's no feet to any fires. People need to stop.
Four months of protest didn't push them.
Because all that happens is they stop picking up the phone until next election time.
Right.
And the time to hold people accountable in politics is now. And if you're not holding them accountable, if you're just going out and being rah-rah cheerleaders for somebody, then you're not helping anybody. You're just putting in place another douchebag.
And you're not even helping him win. Because if he said, we're going to legalize weed, he'd win, period. If he said, we're going to have student loan debt forgiveness, if he picked one issue like that impacts so many people's lives, he would win, period. So if you want to, you know, this business of prayer, I've actually heard people say to me, who aren't even particularly religious, it's interesting, whose people say to me, I'm praying that Biden wins. Stop praying. Tell him I'm not voting for you unless you do X. This is really important.
He will lie. He will lie about some of that stuff to get elected.
Oh, he will. He will.
He'll lie about it. Eventually, he's going to be like, oh, yeah, Medicare for all. I didn't mean that shit. I'm for it. Yeah, sure. Yeah, right. And maybe just get into office and not give a fuck. It's like the rest of them.
I was going to say, 4 months of protest didn't push Biden to do anything. After 4 or 5 months of protest, he would rather reach out to the 51% of white women that voted for Trump than the generations of young people that came out to support Biden.
Yeah, he's running away from them.
You see how he got away?
We don't like looting, blah, blah, blah. So he hasn't said anything that would get those people to vote. And this, you know, I'll call it propaganda. That's what it is. Biden Republicans, that's the latest scam they're running because there are a few prominent Republicans who say they don't, you know, they're never Trumpers or whatever. They don't represent anybody. Republicans are going to vote for the Republican. This is ludicrous. Yeah, but
they don't cross the
gaslighting. They just gaslight progressive. I'm green, by the way. I'm not even a Democrat. Let me just say that.
Ran right away from the topic and ran into the presidential election again, which is always I am voting for Eugene Debs. I believe that his dead, rotting corpse would make a better president than anybody else. And that's my official endorsement today, announced here on YouTube. I honestly, that's not a lie. I really do believe that something that my kid took out of his nose could run the country better than anything that I see out there. So that's my endorsement. But before we go, we ran over Margaret. I know you're busy as hell. I really appreciate you being in here. I didn't say what I always say when she's on here, that Black Agenda Report is the best news source in America today. And her most recent podcast out there talks about the AIDS epidemic and the Black activists involved in the AIDS epidemic were overlooked so much. It was thought of as a white man's disease. And, so many other communities were affected. And a guy who I'd never heard of, but she brought to my attention, named, let's see here, Marcus Garvey. No, that's not his name, is it?
Hubert Harrison.
And I wanted to ask you just a quick question about Hubert Harrison. Tell us, tease your podcast. Tell us who Hubert Harrison is really quickly, because I want people to learn about him.
He was one of the leading socialists of our time. He came from the Virgin Islands to New York. He ended up leading a movement. But someone I had not heard of till about 10 years ago. I'm just going to admit it. And Glenn Ford interviews Jeffrey Perry is his name, who's his biographer, and has spent his life trying to tell people about Hubert Harrison's contribution. So go to blackagendareport.com and listen to our podcast, and you will learn all about him.
Thank you very much. Christian and Daryl, about a minute each. How are we going to fix the police? Are we going to get the racism out of it? And what you're going to talk about in your own productions coming up.
So for me, oh, sorry. Go ahead, Daryl.
No, I was going to say, we're going to fix something. I'll tell you that right now. We're going to fix something. I'll just tell everybody, if anybody wants to look for me, just go to onepeoplesproject.com. You can find One People's Project and Ida Vox, named after Ida B. Wells, idavox.com. They're both on Twitter. I'm D. Lamont Jenkins at Twitter. Rest in peace, Chadwick Boseman. We're going to make it. Yeah, we was about to do some work together. We was actually getting ready to do something. I don't have time to talk about that right now. But right now, I want to remember the man. And the work that he has done. So we're going to miss him. That's it.
Absolutely. I took in a ton of media, all the characters that he played. Jackie Robinson. I mean, it wasn't just Black Panther. The man dedicated his career to portraying Black heroes. And it was just, what a loss. Christian Perez.
As a lifelong comic book fan, I will never, ever forget the hype surrounding Black Panther, and it delivered. It was a moment. And as a Latino, I always perceive everything African Americans or Black people do is kind of like, for good or bad, it's the canary in the coal mine. If you guys do well, that means there's a path open for us. And if you guys are getting beat up in the streets, this means we're probably going to get beat up in the streets tomorrow. But it was such an inspiring film, inspiring actor, inspiring career. Me, Christian Perez, at Perez Podcast on Twitter. Modernity and Absurdity Podcast. I contribute to New Jersey Revolution Radio at least once a month. Thanks again. Glad to be on this panel. It was a lot of fun.
No, it's always great having everybody here. And this isn't like a powerhouse panel. I love these panels. I have a lot of activists on. I love having the new activists on that are having like their first protest to help give them a little PR. But, you know, working with the pros makes my life easy because I got to spend all week explaining how to link into a Zoom room and do all these technical things. And I appreciate the time and the support from everybody. If you're watching on YouTube or Twitter or Facebook or on our website now, www.njrevolutionradio.com. You can watch right there on the homepage. We appreciate you. And if you appreciate these discussions and what's going on here and the state of revolution around New Jersey and around the world, can you please contribute? You just make a couple of dollars. We're asking for like 15, 20 bucks a month. Our goal is to get to $1,000 a month to pay our standing bills, which pay our writers. It pays for this wonderful streaming software, all the platforms and everything like that. It goes to really great use. We're growing. It just keeps growing. It gets bigger and bigger. And when you contribute, it accelerates that growth. So I want to thank everybody who's already contributed. And if you haven't become a monthly donor, please do so at www.njrevolutionradio.com/donate. Until next week at 8 p.m., this is Brian Powers, and I want to remind everybody that the police can quit their jobs. Have a great week, everybody.
Amen to that.
Peace, y'all.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.